Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listen to that. Nothing beats a vinyl.
Some technology just stands the test of time. Our technology not only brings the cool, it also brings the heat. At Mitsubishi Electric, we've been mastering and innovating heat pump technology since 1970. EcoDan, continued innovation in heating for home and business. Mitsubishi Electric, changes for the better.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to and during questioning. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. You understand your rights? Warning, each episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast will contain descriptions of acts of violence or of a sexual nature and are for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off the internet or from some television show. These facts I'm retelling were presented to me by the victims of the crime or the perpetrators who committed the crimes. My descriptions of the crime scenes are what I saw with my own two eyes. If you are going to get offended, turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. Thank you all for joining us today for the conclusion of what happened to Jackie. I want you to stay tuned at the end of today's episode of What Happened to Jackie. I'm going to have some announcements as usual and some shout outs, but I'm also going to be promoing podcasts. So y'all listen for those promos at the end. They're good podcasts and interesting. I think you'll like them. Look them up, subscribe, leave them a review, go to the social media and let them know that Woody with Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast sent you. All right. So let's get started. When I left you last, I had arrested Boudreaux after getting a confession from him that he had done sexual things, really classified as a sexual battery, even though it could have been classified as a rape because of the digital penetration of the vagina with his fingers, but I knew that really wasn't going to fly. Anyway, book him in and go back to the sheriff's office. And now we're waiting in this case, right? We have to wait for Jackie to die. Unfortunately, I mean, we called and got updates on her and they were like, no, there's no way she's going to make it, right? And so when she dies, I mean, of course, we'll try to get a murder warrant and proceed further from there and just keep working the case. And I think we were waiting on some phone records to make sure she had actually called him at his work, like he said she did that night, about a party or whatever, and see who else she might have called, because we had to start excluding other people from having contact with her that night. And of course, as you know, we were screwed on the injuries, the bruises and the scratches, because Boudreaux did not confess to those, and that emergency room doctor locked us out of the room, and he stated she had no injuries and that he had examined her. He just lied to us, I guess. You know, I can't imagine that she got all that inside the hospital, right? But whatever. So meanwhile, a couple of days went by and Chuck Watts calls me and he says, "Hey man, we got to go back to North Oaks for Jackie." I was like, "What happened now?" He said, "I do not know." He said, "But the head of the ICU, the same doctor that did the examination with us when we did all the photographs, he's calling for a meeting with you and I." And I was like, "Oh shit." He said he has some information, but we needed to come over so he could explain it to us. I said, "All right, so you want me to meet you out there?" And he said, "Yeah." And then I forget where I was or where he was, but we drove to Hammond to the hospital and we met and badged our way up to the ICU unit. And when we got there, he had told us to ask for him specifically. And we did, and we called him. He came out and got us and took us like into the administrative side, to his office, his private office. And he said, "Y'all, I mean, I thought we were going to see something else on Jackie, but it wasn't to be the case." And so he brings us in and, you know, he asks us if we found anything out. He's a really caring guy. I mean, he's the exact opposite of that turd from the emergency room, that doctor, right? This guy really wanted justice for this beautiful young lady. And he was like, "You know, can you tell me what's going on?" And I told him, I said, "We made an arrest, but it was for sexual battery." And I explained the situations and we got him to confess, or I got him to confess to masturbating over and penetrating her digitally with his fingers and messing with her breasts, et cetera, et cetera. So I told him all about it. And he said, "Man," he said, "this is so strange and so bizarre." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, time was going by, you know," and he said, "we keep monitoring her and, you know, sent her for, I forget if it was CAT scan or MRI, whatever, y'all, and you have to forgive me again about my medical terminology or lack thereof." But he said, "I sent her for whichever one it was, I think it was a CAT scan, to check like her, you know, head for brain activity or whatever the reason was. He sent her in for this test, right?" And he said that when the results came back, that she had what they call, in layman's term, they call free air inside of her head. And I'm like, I look at Chuck and he looks at me. I'm like, "Okay, if that's layman's term, we're screwed because we really don't know what you're talking about, doc." He said, "Well, I don't know how to explain it to you, but let me tell you what I found." He said, "When the results came back and we could see there was free air getting inside of her head." And he said, "But when I say free air, I mean air that's not coming in through her mouth or her nose, not going through the regular systems. There's a pocket of air in the backside of her head," basically, is how he explained it. And he said, "So I went and I said, we got to find out where this air is getting into her head. It's a source of air that is getting inside of the head where it doesn't belong. And it's not supposed to happen, right?" So he said they went back and reexamined her. I remember she had this long, long, beautiful blonde hair and it was thick, like super thick. And he said, "We went back and they reexamined her. And they got into her hair, the thickness of her hair, and they shaved it up to look at the base of her skull. And once they removed the hair, they observed a perfectly round hole in the base of her neck. I mean, at the back, if you touch the back of your head, it's not at the base of your neck, at the base of your skull." And then he showed us on an x-ray thing, like it was a discoloration. He said, "That's the free air." And he said, "I knew that something was wrong when I saw that. That's why we went back and reexamined her. And her hair was so thick, we had to cut it and shave the spot to find it." And he said, "It is a perfectly round hole that was not healed yet, and it wasn't scabbed over. He said, so I know it's a deep penetration hole. And I'm like, Doc, you telling me it could be like a bullet hole? He said, no. He said, absolutely not. He said, I'll let y'all take a picture of it in a few minutes. He said, I want you to understand what you're looking at before we go in there. He said, you're looking at a perfectly round, circular hole at the base of her head. And he said, that hole, he said, it's not as big as an ice pick. He said, something was jammed into the back of her head, deep into the back of her head. And he said, it's not an ice pick because it's too small in my experience, you know, to be like an ice pick. He said, but it's not a needle, a regular needle, you know, not a whatever CC needle like they do to draw blood and stuff like that. He said, it's in between the two. And fuck me if the first thing that didn't pop into my mind is that second drawer to the left of the sink in the kitchen when I opened it. And what did I see? The Cajun injector syringe. And I told y'all, it's a big ass needle. It's stainless steel and it's hollow. It's made to push massive amounts of liquid through it. And I'm like, oh, fuck me. And I didn't see an ice pick in the house anyway. And he said, there's no way we could have known short of shaving her head and short of running this test. And he said, that's a serious problem. I'm thinking, yeah, if you only knew how serious of a problem it was for us, right? And I go back again to that first day in the emergency room and not getting in to see her and take pictures, et cetera, but whatever. But it gets better. The doc says, we have another problem. I'm like, okay, doc, what is it? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, shit, who knows, right? He said her toxicology came back and it had, you know, some barbiturates in it, some benzos or whatever, like a cocktail of different narcotics. And he said, but that's not the problem. And I said, okay, what's the problem? He said, she has acetone, high amount of acetone in her system. And I was like, holy fuck. Because what does my mind go to now? When I was outside in the doorway of that shed, that metal can, it was white with the blue across the middle and the white letter and bigger and shit says acetone. And I'm like, I said, Doc, I said, are you talking about like acetone, like the paint remover acetone? I mean, I guess there's only one kind of acetone. He said, as far as I know, he said, but it could be and nail polish removers. He said it could have been something else with the acetone and just the acetone remained and the body broke down, whatever else it was. He said, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And I'm thinking now, you know, she's got this injection site in the back of her head and it's bigger than a regular needle. But, you know, it's definitely, he assumed it was an injection site, but because of the air that was inside her skull like that, inside the back of her head like that. And I know there's a medical term for it, but anyway, I'm thinking somebody injected her in the back of the neck with acetone through the at the base of her skull like that, thinking that they would never find that site to kill her, right? So, I mean, I'm just blown away. And Chuck's like, you know, I don't know what the fuck, man. And the doc takes us down to see her, and she's still hooked up to the machine, but now her long, pretty blonde hair is gone. And they had shaved it and turned her over and showed us the spot. And sure enough, a photograph, and it was a perfectly little round hole. And he says, so that's where the free air was injected into the head, or, you know, it was pushed in through that spot. And he said, you needed to know about it. And he said, I think this is important. He said, I can't tell you that the acetone was injected into her, but I can tell you that I've never seen acetone in a person's bloodstream like she had in hers. And I can tell you that that appears to be an injection site because that's where the free air got inside of her head. And he said, that's it. I hope it helps you with your investigation. I'm thinking, man, oh, fuck. And so we thanked him and we left. And Chuck's like, dude, could this case get any more jacked up? And I said, no, I don't believe that it can, Chuck. So we go back to the office and go down Mr. Norris to Mr. Kearney's office and tell him what happened. And Kearney's like, what? And he said, what do you think it could be? And I said, unfortunately, I'm going to tell you this and you're probably going to get pissed off. I said, but I didn't have any way of knowing at the time to connect the thing. I said, when he told me an injection site and he told me the size of it, this before I knew about the acetone, I said, the first thing I'm thinking is, fuck me, there was a Cajun injector syringe in that second drawer in the kitchen. I said, it fits perfectly, the diameter of the hole and all that. And I said, it has a long stainless steel, and they knew what it was. They've all used it before. And it has a long stainless tube on it, you know, for pushing fluids through. And Mr. Kearney was like, well, I mean, he said, first of all, I don't think the guy would have just left it in his kitchen drawer if he had used that to inject her. He said, but it's possible. I mean, he said, if he burned the bedding, then chances are that he burned the whatever it was he used to inject her with. But I said, but maybe not, Mr. Kearney. He said, why don't you think so? I said, well, I fry usually a minimum of 3 turkeys every Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And back then, I used to give them out as gifts, but now I do it, you know, my family and extended family and nieces and nephews and all go to my parents' house. And on Wednesday evenings, I spend like 5 hours frying turkeys. I said, but the thing is, I buy 1 bottle of Cajun injector, Creole garlic butter for each bird that I inject. I said, but guess what? Each one of those bottles comes shrink wrapped with the Cajun injector needle and syringe attached to it. I said, so chances are that, you know, he could have had more than 1 of the Cajun injector needles. I said, I have 3 a year that just for Thanksgiving alone. You know, so I don't know. It's just bad. I said, but Mr. Kearney, it gets a little worse. And he said, tell me. And I told him, I said, she has acetone in her system. He said, what? And I said, yeah, high amounts of acetone. And he said, paint thinner? I said, yes, sir. And the doctor said it was off the charts. Like, I mean, he'd never seen that. And he said, well, was it enough to kill her? And I did ask the doctor that, y'all, would it have been enough to kill her or put her in a vegetative state? And he said, he just didn't know. I mean, you'd have to hire some type of chemical expert to do the breakdown on amounts, et cetera, and what it could do to the body. So, I mean, it's just not something they ever see. Acetone. Yeah. I mean, nobody is going to drink acetone to get that amount in their bloodstream. Right. He said, we just don't see it. We just don't know. And I don't have an answer for you. That's something a forensic pathologist is going to have to look into. I just can't answer it. He said, but I can tell you this, it certainly didn't help her situation by having a large amount of acetone in her system. And so I told Mr. Kearney, I said, I have a photograph of the shed, and because I had checked it out, y'all, when we got back from the hospital, I went back to my crime scene photos. I did not take a picture of the Cajun injector needle in the drawer because I didn't think it was relevant. But I did take a picture in front of the shed, and that metal can, you really can't see what it was. But the metal can was in the doorway. You could see the blue and white, but the labeling was turned to the side. And I said, that can right there, Mr. Kearney. I said, that's a can of acetone. He said, oh, he just leaned back and he's shaking his head. And he said, why do you think that would be in the doorway of the shed? Because I showed him the other pictures of the contents inside the shed. And I said, I don't know, Mr. Kearney, in my mind's eye, I would say that shed being raised off the ground like that, if someone was walking by and didn't want to take the time to go into the shed, they set it on the steps So the next time they come in to the shed, they can put it up or whatever. Or maybe they forgot about us. I don't know. I mean, I'm at a loss. And he said, you need to go back out there and see if that acetone is still there. And he said the Cajun injector, I mean, he said it's pure speculation that the one in the drawer to me, y'all, looked like the ones in my drawers at the house. I rip the first one. Say I have three bottles of marinade. I rip the needle off the first one and I don't jack with the other two, right? I just use the same one because it's the same marinade going in three different birds rather than, cause you have to screw the syringe on the end of the plunger thing. It doesn't come fully assembled, but the one in Boudreaux's deal was fully assembled. You see? So I don't know. He said, I don't think you waste your time on getting the Cajun injector. We'll never be able to prove it. You know, he said, you can testify about it. He said, write it in your report. You know, he said, I don't know what to tell you. He said, but you need to go out there and see if that can of acetone is there in case they can do some kind of trace or chemical analysis, if there's different types or levels or whatever. And of course, none of us are scientists in the room, right? And he's thinking, in case there's some way they could identify whatever's in our system to that.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
My allergies are throwing my whole morning off. Do I sound different to you?
I love it. You sound like, it's that time of year there, bro.
I sound different to me. I feel like I'm in a submarine.
Yeah, well. Have you tried Astapro? It's faster, bro. Oh. Right? Astapro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription strength, indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Hey, I use this, and you should too, Jim. Last weekend, I planted my garden, and it's that time of the year, and my allergies really kicked up with it, right? I use Astapro every time my nasal allergies flare up, and I'm always amazed at how fast I'm back in the game, down on those rows, planting my stuff.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. It's faster, bro. Uses directive for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Astapro and go.
It's springtime, boys. The grass is green, the birds are chirping, and the kids will be out of school soon. That makes it the perfect time to plan a family vacation. And we know from the stories we cover that this is not exactly the time to take the family to the Caribbean. You don't want to end up in the middle of some cartel drug shootout. So this year, it's time to take an international journey. And of course, a big international trip is just one reason to learn a new language with Rosetta Stone. You might have a different one. Maybe you want to connect with family or friends living overseas. Maybe you want to acquire a new skill for work or better understand a certain culture. Rosetta Stone has helped me have fun with my mother and at least have partial conversations in Italian after only a few lessons.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Intuitive process, you pick up a language naturally. Designed for long-term retention. Speech recognition. The true accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Rosetta Stone is convenient and an amazing value.
That's right, Woody. A lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Real Life Real Crime and Daily Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Sayonara.
that can of acetone. He said, I know it's a long shot, but you got to go try. So I did. Chuck and I rode back out to Boudreaux's house and get there, and his vehicle wasn't there. His truck wasn't there. So I was actually just going to ask him, and I'm sure he wasn't happy with me after I arrested him, but I was just going to ask him, could we have it? And if he said no, then I was going to get a search warrant. I didn't want to waste. Actually, it was Chuck, that some of the good old detective. He was like, we need to get a search warrant. He said, fuck that. Let's go out there and just ask him. I mean, if he doesn't know anything about it, then he'd probably just give it to us, and we don't have to waste 3 hours getting a search warrant for it. I got so much great information from Chuck Watts and the older detectives, and I gleaned the best parts of them that I could and try to mold it into myself, right? So we go out there. Boudreaux's vehicle is not there. And I said, well, you know what, Chuck? I'm just going to go around the backside of the residence. Maybe he's in the backyard. And I kind of winked at him. But what I really did is I went around because I knew the shed was in plain view there of the back door. And I was able to see when I went around to the back door to knock on it, if you will. But when I looked at the shed, the acetone can was not there. I don't know. What do you do, right? So we go back, and I mean, this case is just couldn't be any more bizarre or stranger than it already is. Now, you know, we have the sexual battery, a member of battery in Louisiana. Under the Napoleonic Code of Law is opposite all the rest of the states. Everywhere else, the unwanted touching is an assault. And in Louisiana, your assault is a verbal threat. And the battery is unwanted touching. So, we had that. And, of course, Jackie still wasn't dead. And we're at a standstill. We're waiting. We're praying maybe DNA comes back or something happens or whatever. And meanwhile, within a week, probably less than a week, I got a subpoena to go to court, which is nothing new. I mean, I would get probably have 3 or 4 cases a day on most days on motion to suppresses or probable cause hearings, et cetera, because I arrest a lot of people. But I got one for Boudreaux. It was for 9 o'clock in the morning, which told me he wasn't locked up. If he was locked up and he had not made bail, then it would have been at 1 o'clock because the people that you lock up and that stay locked up, then they bring the inmates over at 1 o'clock for their hearings, whatever, maybe bond reductions or motion to suppress or probable cause hearings or whatever. So 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, all right, that morning comes and I get there at 8 and I'm having my coffee and the door opens. I'm sitting in the general bullshit in the general detective office and the door opens and A. Wayne Stewart walks in. Now, let me tell you about Mr. Wayne Stewart. He was without a doubt the best criminal defense attorney in Livingston Parish. Okay. And the only one other attorney that was on his level of skill in the criminal defense world was Mr. Mike Thiel. And Mike Thiel actually taught me criminal justice in college. And I think later on in later years, they would go on to join firms, if you will. And both of them had some problems with the law. But Wayne Stewart was a character and his office was right across the street from our entrance for the courthouse where we went to the detective's office. But he's always smiling and joking and whatever. But let me tell you something. He's a shrewd little fucker when it came to court. And he was really, really good. I wasn't intimidated by him. I mean, I spent more time on the stand than most lawyers ever spent in the courtroom in their entire career. I mean, I was constantly on the stand. And I've been against Wayne many, many times in many different cases. And I hadn't lost to him yet. But he walks in. I'm thinking, I say, hey, Mr. Wayne, what you doing? He said, I just want to see if you were here. And I'm like, me? He said, yeah. I said, why? He said, you got your subpoena for Boudreaux? And I said, yeah, I did. I said, he hired you? He said, yes, sir, he did. I said, fuck. And that's what I'm thinking. I didn't show it right. Never let him see you sweat. But I'm thinking, oh, man. Because this dude, he was so good, y'all. And I knew it, for him to take the time to come up there just to see if I was there, he was hoping, first of all, that he would get lucky and win because I wasn't going to show that that wasn't going to happen, right? And then, but for him to come up there and see if I was there, I should have even do that on murder cases we had together. So I knew something was up. I just didn't know what it was. And he said, well, okay, man, he said, we'll see you down there. And I said, yeah, I'll be there, Mr. Wayne. And then he's bullshitting around. He always, jokes with us, et cetera, but everybody knew. I mean, you don't want to call it. I want to call him slimy, but if you ever get the defense attorney in the movies, the slimy defense attorney or whatever, the sneaky win at all costs guy, that was Wayne Stewart. And that's why he was the best. And I mean, he just was. I mean, he won a lot of shit and he won a lot of cases. And in most of the cases he won didn't have to go to trial because he beat the cops on the stand and on the motion to suppresses and the probable cause hearings and getting things thrown out and stuff like that. But when it came time for a jury trial, he's the best. He worked the jury from the, during voir dire, that's jury selection, whatever. I guess it's a Napoleonic code law term, a French code, voir dire. And, but he was worked the courtroom from the get go and he worked the juries. And I knew I was up against the best against, on Boudreaux. And the worst case that I'd ever had from, y'all know why. I mean, you know everything about it, right? So we'll go down to the courtroom and let me explain to you how it works. It was in the big courtroom and you have all your general public seating, which I mean is in the middle. It's like church pews all the way across. And then if you walk into the courtroom, you have all the middle seating and there's aisleway on the outhand side of this massive long pews that are in the middle. The walkways on either side of the courtroom. So you walk down the right aisle if you come in the right door, which you had to actually because they had a metal detector. So that's where everybody else had to come in. We could come in through a back door. But so if you come in through the main door, you go through the metal detector, you go through security, you go in and you walk down and you find yourself a place to sit. But if not, when you walk up, the first thing you see on the right-hand side of the courtroom is the jury box. And it's raised up and it has a railing around it. And has, a door on both ends of the jury box, a little swinging door. But when you walk up and you're about 10 feet away from the jury box, there's a brick column and all the pew seatings behind you. Then you have the very front row of the last or the first, which way you come into the courtroom, pew. And then there's a door to the right, which is the one we usually came through, so we didn't have to go through security, et cetera. But that's also the door where the jury would go out, and then the jury room was back there where they would deliberate. But if you're facing the courtroom, the jury box is to your right, and then you have two tables. The, on the right-hand side is where the defense would sit, and on the left-hand side is where the prosecution would sit. In the trial, they reversed it. If it was a trial week, the prosecution would sit closest to the jury and the defense would sit on the other side. So anyway, you go in and it's always packed, right? And I think this was a Monday. I'm pretty sure it was a Monday. And the so it's packed and they probably have 150 cases on the docket, different motions. And this is criminal court now. This is not a civil courtroom or, a divorce courtroom or anything like that. This is criminal court. We would go in and walk in and tell the district attorney we were there and go sit in the jury box. And if you look across the courtroom, remember you had the fence, would be sitting right there next to you. And then the prosecution, but on the other side, the district attorney's team would line up. And by team, I mean, you would have like the secretaries that would have the files, the victim's advocate, just the different ladies that work for the district attorney's office. And then, of course, in front of that, you had the court reporter and then the judge's bench and the witness stand. If you're facing the judge's bench, witness stands to the right. So we go in and they all rise, honorable, and I forget what judge it was, honorable such and such. And, deputy calls it out. So everybody stands. The judge comes in and says, be seated. And then he says, okay, we're going to start doing the docket. And they start calling cases. And, whatever it is, motions are heard or court dates are set, trial dates are set. But usually the DA would try to get us out of there first because he knew we had shit to do. And so Wayne didn't get there till, he was like, he's always running late. And even though he knew I was going to be there, and it might have been kind of a mind fuck on his part to try to mess with me. But see, he comes in like 9:45 and court started at 9:00. And he comes in and then goes to the DA. And he's like, hey, I got to be in court somewhere else. Can I go ahead and get mine out of the way? And the DA accommodates him because they work together every day. I mean, even though we're on the opposite sides, they didn't hate each other or anything. Wayne was a likable guy. And so anyway, they call a case. It's a state of Louisiana versus whatever Boudreaux. And A. Wayne stands up and says, Your Honor, Wayne Stewart for the defendant. And the DA stands up and says, DA, whomever for the state. And he said, Your Honor, we're here this morning on a behalf to hear a motion to suppress the confession of Mr. Boudreaux to Detective Overton. And in the motion to suppress, Mr. Stewart states that Detective Overton was wrong in getting a confession from him because Boudreaux had asked for a lawyer previously. And the judge tells him to proceed. And so the district attorney says, Detective Overton, we like to call Detective Overton to stand. So I get out of the box, I walk up, and I know I turn around and stand up and put my hand on the Bible and raise my left hand on the Bible, raise my right hand. And the lady, the court clerk says, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you guys. Yes, ma'am, I do. And then they say, be seated. So I've done this 1,000 times. I sit down, pull the microphone to a comfortable distance to me, and turn to the prosecutor, and he starts with a basic question. Can you tell us your name? Yeah, I'm Detective Woody Overton. And were you a detective on such and such date? Or where were you employed on such and such date? I said, Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office as a detective. And he said, can you tell us what happened with you and the defendant, Mr. Boudreaux? Did you arrest him on that date? I said, yes, I did. And they said, what for? I said, he gave a confession to sexual battery. And prosecutor says, no more questions, Your Honor. Well, let me explain something. And you've heard me talk about it in past episodes. This is simply a free shot at the defense attorney to try to do a couple things. One, to get just blind ass lucky and get the case thrown out thinking that maybe I'm going to mess up on something or the judge is going to rule against me. But more importantly, for a good defense attorney, when they know it's going to be a good trial later on, they use it as a fact finding mission because they get to ask you whatever the hell they want to. And I don't think it should be that way, but it always has been. And I guess it always will be. But me, if I was the district attorney, if they got off any point besides the motion that they filed, which was the motion to suppress the tape confession he gave me on the porch, I'd be like, I object, but whatever. I'm not an attorney. So A. Wayne stands up, says, good morning, Detective Overton. I said, good morning, Mr. Stewart. And he said, so can you tell me how you first came in contact with my client? I said, the very first day. And he said, yeah, you can start from there. And I explained that we were called out, 911, deceased body. He said, did you see Jackie at that residence? I said, no, I did not. I said, she was being placed into the ambulance. He said, okay. And he said, then did you do a search of the residence? I said, no, I did not. I said, I went in and I observed. I said, but I actually wasn't searching for anything. I said, I was just looking to see what was what. And he said, so you came into contact with my client for the first time there? I said, I did. He said, but you were searching. I said, Mr. Wayne, I was not searching. And I knew where he was going. And he said, well, you were in there acting in your capacity as a detective, right? And I said, that's correct. He said, it could have been a possible crime scene, right? I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know. That's why I was looking around. But he said, but you talked to my client and got permission to look around. I said, sure I did. He said, and I knew it was coming. He said, well, you talked to my client and you identified yourself as a detective. I said, I did. And he said, did you advise my clients of his rights when you identified yourself as a law enforcement officer? And I said, no, I did not. And I didn't have to elaborate, y'all. And I know I learned over the years, you don't get baited in to what they're trying to do. A. Wayne Stewart had a plan, and he was going to go through it, try to go through every inch of it. And he did. And he said, why didn't you advise Ms. Rice? I said, because at the time it wasn't a criminal investigation. And he said, well, don't you think if you search a man's house? I said, Mr. Wayne, I told you I was not there to search the house. I was there to respond about what your client called in to be a dead body, which turned out to not be a dead. I was doing my fingers like quotations, dead body. And I said, simply spoke with him, asked him what he found. He's the one that called 911, not me. He's the one that instigated contact with us, not me. I said, I was responding to it. I said, and he called and says, there's a dead body. I did, you know, we took a tape statement from him about what he found and, you know, went to the hospital and continued from there. He said, oh, yeah, let's talk about that. And I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go. And he said, when you got to the hospital, what happened? And this is the point where I would have ejected this as a district attorney. I'd have been like, Your Honor, this is irrelevant as to the confession, right? But the DA's got, you know, other things going on, I guess. And then I said, well, we went in, and he said, did you see Jackie at the hospital? I said, did not. And he said, why not? I mean, you drove to the hospital to see her. You responded to my client's house because you're, you know, looking into things. He said, why wouldn't you see her? And I already fucking knew that he knew, well, knew that we didn't get in to see her, and he knew about the injuries coming out. Of course, Boudreaux would have told him all this, the injuries coming out a couple of days later, right? And I said, because the doctor told us it was an overdose and he wouldn't allow us into the room because they were working on her. He said, oh. But he said, did you ask the doctor? Did the examiner? Did he see injuries to her? And again, I would object it because it's outside the scope on the dude's confession, right? But again, I'm not the lawyer. And I said, no. I said, yeah. I said, actually, yeah, I did ask him when he denied his room. I said, we need to get in to see her, to photograph her. And he was real adamant, no, it was a drug overdose. And I asked about injuries. He said he examined her and there were no injuries. He said, so there were no injuries. Now, at this point, he's playing his part. I mean, he knows the judge that we're in front of is going to be the trial judge. And so he's feeding the judge, I don't say a bias. I believe all the judges out there were fair, but he's feeding the judge doubt from the beginning. He said, so an emergency room doctor told you she had no injuries to her body and that it was simply a drug overdose and that she was going to die. I said, that's correct. He said, and you just didn't need to photograph her. I said, that's not what I said, Mr. Wayne. I said, I asked to photograph her and we were denied. And he said, and you just gave up. I said, yeah, actually, yeah, we did. And after repeated attempts, you know, we left. And he said, okay. He said, so what happened next? And he said, when's the next time you saw my client? I'm like, fuck, man, why don't you eject and let's get straight to the confession part. So I told him, you know, that we had to get a search warrant to go back to the house to search his client's residence and his body for injuries. He said, hold on. This is a drug overdose. He's playing for the courtroom. He's playing for his potential clients, future clients that are in a crowd, which are all the shitheads that got arrested over the weekend are waiting on their bond hearings and stuff. And they, you know, they're thinking they're watching a high drama courtroom television show. So whatever. We played it back and forth. And I was like, yeah, okay, Wayne. And he said, so what happened? I said that we had to go back to the hospital. We got called back because she had injuries to her body. And he said, no. He said, you said the emergency room doctor said she didn't have any injuries. I said, he did say that. I said, and now you're telling me she's got all these injuries. And he said, how many? I said, I believe it was 57, Mr. Wayne. And he said, well, how do you explain that? And he said, you're there and you're there to examine her, et cetera. And the doctor tells you clearly that she is a drug head. It's a drug overdose, and he's examined her body, and she has no injuries. You asked several times. He denied you admittance and was very adamant with you. He said, wasn't he? I said, yes, sir, he was. He said, if you want to deny it, I have your report right here, your initial report. I said, Mr. Wayne, I'm not denying it. Yes, he denied us access to the room, and he did say she had no injuries. He said, well, you know, it's 2 days later, and she's got 57 injuries now. And I'm like, yep, that's right. And he's playing it up, and he's mugging it up. So it goes on and on, y'all. And then he said, so you did the search warrant. He said, tell me what happened at the end of the search warrant. He said, did my client not ask you?
Hey, y'all, my wife's biggest struggle this past year was fighting the symptoms associated with menopause. Hot flashes, mild mood swings, and sleeplessness. She had them all until she tried Hormone Harmony. She was amazed at how much Hormone Harmony reduced her symptoms and supported her mood and her general well-being. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas, no desire to be in bed next to someone, if you know what I mean. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all of these things. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code RLRC for 15% off today. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more health issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health. What she discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. And this is true for many premium brands. Fortunately, she found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Now, my dog, Phoebe, is the queen of our house, and I can tell you that her health is extremely important to us. She is a part of our family. I watched the video, y'all, and I was amazed by the things I didn't know that could impact your dog's health. This 20-minute video is packed full of tips that I've already started with my dog, Phoebe. I'm noticing more energy, healthier skin and coat. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/RLRC and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/RLRC.
For an attorney? I said, nope, he did not. He said, what do you mean he didn't? I said, he didn't ask me for an attorney. He said, did my client not say that he wanted an attorney? Did he not say that to you? I said, no, sir, he did not. He said, he most certainly did. I said, no, you got it wrong, Mr. Wayne. He said, how do you mean I got it wrong? I said, he didn't ask me. He said, oh, come on, Woody. And I was giving him back a little bit, right? And he said, well, then who did he ask? I said, Detective Watson, Chief Deputy Kearney Foster, that were interviewing him. He told them he wanted an attorney. He said, isn't that apples and oranges? I said, well, whatever. And I said, you asked me, or you made the statement that it was me. And I said, he did not tell me he wanted an attorney. He said, well, were you present in the residence when my client stated basically for y'all to get out and he wanted an attorney? I said, I was. He said, what'd you do? He said, didn't you continue to question my client, et cetera? I said, no, I did not. I said, I absolutely did not. He said, yes, you did. I said, no, I didn't. And he said, well, tell me what happened. I said, well, we were getting ready to leave. And I told Mr. Kearney that I just wanted to say something to Mr. Boudreaux. And he said, well, you know, you can't question him. He said he wanted an attorney. I said, Mr. Wayne, I didn't want to question him. He said, well, it doesn't make any sense that you want to go back in. I said, sure it did. And I said, I just want to talk to the man. And as a human being, he said, oh, that's junk. He said, you wanted to question him. I said, I never asked him a question. I said, as a matter of fact, I didn't let him say anything to me. He said, well, what did you say? And I said, I went back in there and I told him, I know you're a man of faith and you better pray to God that Jackie doesn't die. Because if she does, then they're coming back with an arrest warrant for murder for probable cause, which is 50% plus one. I told him the exact conversation, y'all. I didn't lie. And he started jumping on it. Oh, don't you think that is shameful? You using God against this man? I said, I didn't use God against him. I said, I mean, he had crosses and he had the Bible. And I asked him, was he a praying man and a man of faith? And he shook his head. Yes. He said, well, he did answer questions. I said, no, not verbally. He just shook his head. And I told him, don't answer that. You know, so I said, and I wasn't in there for more than 3 or 4 minutes and they came and got me. He said, you have a recording of that? I said, no, sir, I do not. I said, and he said, well, why do you think we should believe you? And I said, well, because I'm not lying to you. And I said, because I was not there holding a gun to your client's head when he called the sheriff the next morning and asked to speak to me. And he was like, oh, and so he said, the next day, my client told you things. He said, don't you think that he needed his attorney present? I said, no, sir, I did not. And he just went round and round about it. I said, Mr. Wayne, we can do this dance all day long. I said, why don't you just play the tape? I said, it's on air. I clearly asked him before I made entry into the residence, did you call for me? He said, yes. I said, do you understand that I can't talk to you without an attorney because you said you want an attorney? He said, I don't want an attorney. And I said, yeah, but you have to do a consent question. Blah, blah, blah. I went through the whole thing and it's on there. I said, the one thing that can't get twisted around, Mr. Wayne, well, like you're trying to do is the truth. And that tape is the truth. Play it. And he said, Your Honor, I don't have anything further. Then the DA got up and said, Your Honor, I'd like you to listen to the tape. And that's pretty powerful moving shit. And once I was at the door and told him the part about the attorney and he waived it and said he didn't need one, A. Wayne stood up and said, Your Honor, we withdraw the motion to suppress the confession. So all that was his fact-finding mission and his way to start planting the seeds in the judge's head, possibly for to get a lower bail when Jackie died or whatever. That, you know, somebody else could have really, and he did a great job. And I would have done the same thing if I was an attorney. And he's playing the future card is what A. Wayne was doing. And he wasn't worried. He knew that motion to suppress wasn't going to go through. That's why before it was played to the crowd about him sucking her nipples and fingering her and coming on top of her. I mean, he didn't want that out there and he didn't want the judge to hear that part yet. Right. Cause the judge has got 1,000 open cases. So before that part got to play, he withdrew it. And that was the end of that hearing. And you know what, y'all? I'm coming up on an hour, but I'm not going to go into week four. We're just going to run this one a little bit long. We were a little bit late dropping the episode last week, so I'm not going to do it to you again. And I'm going to conclude this story by telling you what happened next, which is absolutely nothing. And time marches on, right? So, I mean, I've got every day, I've got new victims and new cases and working and new bodies and new rapes and, you know, time marches on. Just because Jackie is in ICU doesn't mean other criminals are going to stop committing crimes. And I didn't hear anything else. And there was no more court dates. And it takes a long time to go to trial, y'all. There would have been no more court dates on that other than a status conference, what they call it, a status conference. And then they would have set a trial date for Boudreaux. But basically, the DA was waiting on Jackie to die also. And then, I mean, I just really slipped my mind and went on work. And then 9 months later, Chuck calls me, and we weren't partners anymore. I had somebody I was training by then, probably, I think, Jim Rathman. Chuck called me, said, "Well," he said, "we finally got it." I said, "What?" He said, Jackie's dead." I almost said her last name. "Jackie's dead." And he said, "The autopsy's tomorrow at 9. Can you do it?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll do it." And so I show up the next morning and go in for the autopsy. And she had been housed in a long-term, they moved her out of ICU. She ended up being housed in a long-term home where, I mean, I don't know the parameters of it or how to define it or what you call those places where people that are in a vegetative state stay on life support. But I guess it was too cost prohibitive to keep her in an ICU. I don't know. But she had been moved to some other facility, and it took her 9 months to die, y'all. 9 months. And when they unzipped the bag and put her on the table, I'll never forget it. She didn't even look like a human being. She probably was like 125 pounds before. And I'm looking at like a Holocaust, a concentration camp, but worse victim. I mean, there was literally nothing but skin and bones. And you hear that term, but unless you've seen it, and then go look up the German POW concentration camps, Auschwitz or Dachau is one I went to and visited. Go look up the people that are starved, or every bone, everything. I mean, there's literally not a piece of meat on this girl's body. And I think she weighed like 67 pounds or something like that. I mean, it was all bones and whatever fluids were left in her body. And the worst part was she had bed sores. And I know, you know, when you lay in that spot for so long, they come in and they flip you a couple times a day and stuff like that. I mean, because you can't turn yourself, and the body just rots away on the spots that it's sitting. And God damn it. I guess because she sat so long, but even though they were turning her, she had huge, massive fucking bed sores. You literally could see bone in places, and the bed sores, y'all, is where the skin's rotted away. Look that one up if you want to have a shitty image in your head for the rest of the day. Look up bed sores, and just absolutely heartbreaking to see that girl, the young lady, from the video on the beach to her photographs in the house of happy times, you know, when she was young and alive and vibrant, and now she's laying on this cold steel table, dead, and doesn't even look like a human. And between the bed sores and then no meat on her body, and she did autopsy, and the pathologist, the guy that I told y'all about in an episode, pants on the ground, he's a genius. I mean, for all his quirkiness and everything else. But it had been 9 months, and he had the toxicology. He knew about the acetone, but, you know, this worked the body from head to toe. I told you about it. Now they scalp it out and they take the top of the head off and weigh all the organs and everything else. And he knew about the injection site in the back of her neck. And at the end of it, he just didn't have an answer. He said, "You know, I just can't tell you." He said, "I just can't tell you." And he said, "I can tell you that I showed him, I brought all the photographs of the bruises and scratches." And he said, "Those didn't kill her." He said, "I can't tell you if the hole in the back of the neck killed her, where the air was pushed in or whatever was pushed in." He said, "I can't tell you. It's been too long, you know." And he said, "It's unfortunate." He said, "I don't know why people would keep somebody on life support for that long." He said, "But that's family's decisions." And he said, "I mean," or he said, "hopefully her spirit left her body on that first day, and she wasn't trapped inside her, you know, all this time. And this has come from a pathologist, but it was bad. And he said, I can't give you a cause of death. He said, I can give you a cause of death, but I can't give you a cause of a homicide. And I technically can't call it a homicide. And cause of death was whatever. I don't know, renal failure or some shit. The main thing was, is he couldn't call it a homicide because there wasn't enough proof. And it goes back to that first emergency room doctor. And I don't know, y'all. And people had asked me before about what case sticks with me and what case haunts me. And, you know, I hadn't thought about Jackie in a long time. I don't know what made me think about her a couple of weeks ago when I was doing this. Something, I'd been driving by somewhere or whatever. And I had to do that because I had so many cases and tragedy cases and bad things that I guess I just bury them down in my mind and I don't think about them. And let me back up. I saw Wayne Stewart. Probably a couple months after that motion suppress or whatever, and Jackie was still alive, and we were on another case. We were talking about another case, and I said, "Hey, man," I said, "whatever happened to Boudreaux?" I said, "When's his trial date coming up?" He said, "It's not." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I pled him out, man." He said, "You think I'm fucking stupid?" He said, "I pled him out to attempted sexual battery, and they gave him 5 years probation." I shit you not. I said, "You motherfucker." He said, "Hey, man, it's the job." And he has a right to the defense. And he said, "You know, the case is kind of messed up. And you know, they never would get a murder charge out of it." I said, "Yeah, I know." I said, "You're right." And so he got 5 years probation for admitting to all the stuff that I told you. I don't want to talk about the dirty stuff again, but he got 5 years probation. Jackie died. Her body just quit. And I don't know. So here's the answer to what happened to Jackie. The answer is we'll never know. So I'm going to conclude the episode at this time. Appreciate y'all for listening. I know it was a long 3-week deal. I didn't intend upon that, but I don't use scripts and I don't write notes and stuff. I just talk out of my head from memory. So I never know how long they're going to go because I never know what's going to pop into my head. But so I hope you enjoyed it. Tough story, but true. And that's it. So thank y'all. And I appreciate each and every one of you. I love you. Don't forget to check out our social media, 3 Facebook pages, the regular one, and then the Lagniappe page, which is where fans get to share things. And I have many great fans that I've traded items with. And the page I'm most proud of, which is Real Life, Real Crime, Friends, Fans, and Crew. It's a private page. You have to ask to join it. And our Dream Team moderators will get you approved. Now, on the private page, it's the shit, man. It's got so much fan interaction and true crime stuff posted every day and all that. And I don't think we're over 2,000 members in it right now. 2,000 members in it in that private page. And it's just huge. But a lot of fans go and leave reviews on the regular, the open page. It's Real Life, Real Crime Facebook page. And I appreciate that. I don't think that y'all understand the benefit that you can get out of going to join a private group. And we don't make any money off of anything. I want you to go and join because it's so awesome. The fans and the true crime stuff and Karen Ortolano posting her true crime stuff and Jenny White and different moderators doing things. Karen travels. And then y'all on the Lagniappe page, don't forget about our cookbook that's going to be coming out around Thanksgiving and stuff like that. So it's just a lot. Also, we're on YouTube, Instagram, what else? Twitter and all that stuff. We're everywhere. So if you would take the time, go to iTunes, whether you listen to it on iTunes or not. I'm asking you if you would please, if you haven't already, over 500 of you have now, please go leave us a review and just type in Real Life, Real Crime on iTunes. It pops up. Show pops up and you have a spot for you to leave a review. I don't care if it's 1-star or 5-star, but it helps. There's some kind of algorithm that helps boost us to the top or in the search engine. So I would ask if you're a fan, if you take a couple minutes to do that, it would really help us out. I appreciate it. And patron members, thank you so much. I'm not going to take any time reading names today. I'm going to have us doing a special release episode next week. We have huge, huge news on two fronts for Real Life, Real Crime, life-changing news that's coming, and it's all because of y'all. If you can't be a patron, that's great. I love you just as much, but it's y'all liking and sharing and reviewing and subscribing to Real Life, Real Crime that's made us get so big. And we've got some fantastic news. One that I think every true crime fan is going to be super excited about. The other one, every fan of Real Life, Real Crime is going to be excited about. So we're going to do a special show. Next week's show, as I said, 2 weeks, it'll be next week because I'm recording this early because I have to fly out tomorrow. But I love all y'all and appreciate you. Thanks for everything that you do. Thanks for tuning in and listening. And stay tuned to listen to the promos that are coming up. Check them out. And I love and appreciate each and every one of you. Till next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
From the brilliant creative minds that brought you Keep Drinking, It'll Get Better, and The Real Housewives of Hillcrest Nursing Home comes the podcast that people are raving about. Hi, this is Edward October for OctoberPodVHS.com, here to tell you what people are saying about our true crime podcast. A thread store in Arizona says, too much dribble and slang. These ladies obviously enjoy their own humor and sound high. Hey, at least they called you ladies. Benny from Idaho says, your topics are so appealing, but a three-person pod is difficult enough to follow without banter? Our true crime podcast only has two people? Wait. Where's the other 100 five-star reviews? Can somebody give me the five-star reviews? Okay, here we go. Much better. Luscious Lee says, stand up, 5 stars. You girls are funny AF. I especially love the Me and Mrs. Jones rendition you sneak into the recording. Cherry G 107 says, I struggle finding a new podcast, and so far, I've been hooked to you guys' podcast. Keep up the good work. Thumbs up, smiley face. Our true crime podcast, 2 girls, 1 story, and lots of bad renditions of songs you love. Available on your favorite podcatcher. Go binge it today.
The neighborhood is unsafe, the streets unlit. While others sleep soundly, you lie awake because you know the truth. You know that, no matter where you go, there's always a chance that a monster is in your midst. The darkness that runs deep within our own veins, the evil found in even the sweetest of souls, sometimes comes to light. And when it does, the result is a person that takes on that evil, that wears it proudly, and becomes part of the darkness itself. I am Aaron from Devil We Know podcast. And on our true crime show, we dive into the scariest corners of our past and present to reveal the devil we know. A father, a mother, a brother, a sister, and anyone, anywhere who hides in plain sight, living a life of bloody secrets while living just next door. Come check us out and hear the chilling, true stories about the devils we know.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to and during questioning. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. You understand your rights?
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.